It's time to talk sports. It's Hacksaw's Headlines, a panorama of the world of sports, stories, comments, and opinions. Now, here's iconic sports talk show host Lee Hacksaw Hamilton and co-host John Riley.
Who wants to talk sports on a Monday? We do, from the Dixieline Lumber and Home Center Studios in San Diego. Coming off a great sports weekend, we welcome you to Hacksaw's Headlines, our Monday bonus podcast. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Lee Hacksaw Hamilton, along with my co-host, John Riley. We're back in studio in San Diego next hour or so. Ton of topics on the table. We urge you to be with us through the hour and then join us right at the end for what we call Fans Forum. Our Monday bonus podcast is brought to you by Dixieline Lumber and Home Centers, 9 stores in San Diego. You got projects for the home, for the patio, by the pool, for the garage, or the business. Think Dixieline Lumber. And by North County Eye Center, Poway and Escondido, we will all need help with our eyes somewhere down road. When that time comes, think North County Eye Center, Poway, Escondido. John Riley, coming off a pretty good sports weekend. Boy, we got a lot of things to talk about. A lot of names in the news, not all making positive news.
Yeah, lots of crazy stories on the list today, Lee. But how was your trip? Did you have a good time?
It was cool. Went to Virginia for a week. It was cold. It was windy. It was kind of East Coast spring. Glad to be back home. Glad to be back in studio with you. Didn't want you to do this thing by yourself if I got stuck in airplane delays from an airport. John, Fans Forum, when we are done with our segment of the podcast, all the topics on the table, the fans take over. For all the people new on our live stream, just explain to them how the Fans Forum works.
Okay, so Fans Forum is your chance to get involved. If you've got a question or comment for Lee on anything in the world of sports, just type it in the live chat on Facebook, YouTube, or on X, and we'll get you involved in Fans Forum at the conclusion of Hacksaw's Headlines.
A reminder, if you like sports, of course you like sports. Have you ever checked my website? Why not? I write on it every day. It is loaded with a ton of information. You're just a baseball fan? Check the baseball section of Hacksaw's Headlines. You like everything NFL? Take a look at that page. NBA, NHL, here, there, and everywhere I write about it. And when you go to the homepage, when you punch it up, there's a big orange box in the upper right-hand side. Fill in your name and information so you can join Hacksaw's Insiders Group. Then you get on our email list for a wide variety of things that we're adding to our podcast. John, awful lot to cover. You pick topic one.
Okay. I know we had a great series over the weekend, but let's talk a little bit about the latest with Ohtani and now Julio Urias, too.
Yeah, let's talk about the Dodgers situation. Ohtani has been cleared. Federal investigators give him his reputation back. He was a victim of the unbelievable bank fraud. Ipe Muzahara pleads guilty to theft of $16 million of funds from various Ohtani bank accounts because of his gambling addiction. Muzahara is facing 30 years in prison and a $1 million fine. He's posted $25,000 bond, has turned in his passports. He's been ordered to enter a clinic for gambling addiction. The investigation that lasted about 3.5 weeks, staggering statistics, that he was involved making 19,000 bets in a 3-year span. He was making on the average of 25 bets per day. He won $142 million in bets. He lost $183 million in 3 years. He changed the coding on Ohtani's bank accounts so no one knew about the large withdrawals, and he set up separate bank accounts using Ohtani's name so that when they won money, that money went to Muzahara's bank account, not back into the Ohtani bank account. He blocked the alerts on the accounts so that Ohtani's agent, Ohtani's accountant, Ohtani's personal lawyer never got notifications when large amounts of money were transferred. He stole Ohtani's identity, background, personal information. He talked to the bank as if he were Ohtani. The weird thing, he spoke English to the bank officials in Southern California. Ohtani does not speak English. Nobody came aware of that. And then, of course, he had the personal bank accounts in which he picked up all the money, 37-page federal indictment, gambled from 2021 to 2024. The investigators found thousands of text messages and emails between Muzuhara and Ohtani. Not once in I was told it was like 13,000 transactions, communications. Not once was there ever mention of gambling on sports, either Muzuhara to Ohtani, Ohtani to Muzuhara. Not once up until the bitter end was there any mention about gambling addiction or massive financial losses.
Wow.
There was mention about, quote, business investments. So what they've dug up in a three-week window since the story exploded in Seoul, South Korea, is absolutely amazing. And now I guess we can also get the understanding and answer to the question, Ohtani never gave him the codes, never gave him the data. This guy figured out and stole the access to it. Ohtani and his people had no idea $500,000 withdrawals 9 different times because they were not getting the bank alerts. All the bank alerts had been redirected towards Muzuhara. Absolutely amazing story. But think about that. 30 years in prison, $1 million fine likely.
Yeah, likely. So we're going to see how this breaks. But the fans, a lot of fans, are convinced that Ohtani is in on this, that Muzuhara and Ohtani, they hang out in their hotel room and they make bets when they're on the road. And there's even been some people on social media that said that Muzuhara and Ohtani were hanging out and laughing after the news broke. So apparently their friendship isn't disrupted by all of this theft. I mean, it seems like there's so much more going on here, Lee.
I don't know. I mean, the FBI and the IRS who conducted this investigation said victim, cleared his name. And Ohtani has met with every one of the facets conducting an investigation and answered all the questions. They have a Japanese interpreter for MLB who then communicates to the Japanese interpreter for the Dodgers who has now been assigned to work with Ohtani. I use the words rush to judgment. The whole bloody world dove in on the story 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, they did.
Everybody, you didn't rush to judgment, did you? Yeah, you did. Hey, the FBI has cleared him. MLB is continuing its investigation. It doesn't seem to bother Ohtani. He's just hitting the crap out of the balls, having an unbelievable superstar start to the season.
I want to just one quick note, though. Ohtani does speak English. We saw him speak English last night talking about his cleats. Did you see that?
No.
You know, and granted, he's not perfectly fluent.
He wouldn't be doing this podcast.
Well, no, he wouldn't, but he could still speak some English. It's not like, you know, he's, you know, the Tommy Pinball Wizard guy.
Okay, so if you have an opinion on the Ohtani situation, what the FBI and the prosecutors have uncovered, jump on board Fans Forum, get in line early and join us. That's one piece of the controversial equation with Dodger baseball. The other one involves their former pitching ace, Julio Urias. He has now been hit in the L.A. Police Department 5 misdemeanor charges, domestic abuse and assault. This is the aftermath of an incident that happened in the middle of last season when he was removed from the roster, shoving of his wife against a fence, pulling her hair in an argument. It was all videotaped by a passerby who realized this is the Dodger pitcher that's involved in this incident. He's facing 6 months to 1 year in prison if he's convicted of any of these misdemeanors. Baseball is going to hand him a second suspension. He'll be the first MLB player since they invoked the new domestic abuse policy to be penalized twice. So the fact that she was not hurt, but she was roughed up, does not look good for him. Urias could probably get a 40-game suspension because the rule book is if you violate something, the second time it's doubled, the third time it's tripled. He's already served a 20-game suspension. He could probably get a 40-game suspension, which probably would wipe him out till the All-Star break. He is a free agent. He did all this right before he became a free agent, so he has painted himself into a really bad corner. Anybody going to touch this guy, John?
Someone will eventually. I mean, I'm surprised Trevor Bauer hasn't signed yet either. But yeah, it's idiotic for him to do this right before he went to free agency. But isn't it amazing how when we do Hacksaw's headlines, how many stories are outside the lines, you know, off the field? And here we go, kicking it off with Muzuhara and now with Julio Urias.
So if you're a Dodger fan You're a baseball fan. Jump on board Fans Forum. Just give us a response, what you think about Ohtani, what you think about Urias. Let's go from there to what's going on the field.
On the field, the Padres 2 out of 3 up at Dodger Stadium. That's pretty good.
Comeback crew, third come from behind win in a week. I tell you, they're showing resiliency. They've dug themselves out of 3 holes. That's been pretty impressive. Hey, they're playing long ball. I mean, some of those games resembled home run derby. What Tatis has done, what Machado's done, what Kim has done, what Jake Cronenworth has done. To me, the pitching is still a little iffy. You never quite know from start to start what you're getting from you, what you hope you're going to get from Darvish, from Musgrove, even from the back end of the rotation and Waldron. Michael King, 4 home runs in 4 innings. And geez, the Padres won that game. King is walking a lot of guys and throwing a lot of home run balls, and he's throwing a lot of pitches. He kind of looks like this year's version of Blake Snell. But the Padres have confidence in him. It is a small sample size. So, I mean, yeah, they're 2 games back of the Dodgers. Now they continue the road trip up in Milwaukee. But they've shown resiliency. They've shown stuff that they did not show hardly at all last year under Bob Melvin. They're showing that for Mike Schilt. Guys are, I don't know if they're playing loose or whether it's just everybody's got bad pitching once you get beyond the second starter in your rotation or into the bullpen. But the Padres are hitting the long ball. Dodgers. Top of the batting order is absolutely fabulous. You go 1 through 6, and all those dudes are hitting anywhere from 283 to, in some cases, like Mookie Betts, 400. Mm-hmm. Top of the batting order is amazing. Black hole at the bottom, 7, 8, and 9. Nothing off the bench. Their pitching looks a little shaky. Their pitching looks beat up. Their pitching walked 14 batters on Sunday. That's why it was a 4-hour game. Home run balls are becoming an issue. Now they lose Bobby Miller, the number 2 guy in the rotation, goes on the DL with shoulder inflammation. He's pitched well in spurts, but in between, his recovery and his ability to throw bullpens has really been hindered. They did an MRI. There's no structural damage, but obviously he's got inflammation in that shoulder. The kid behind him, Gavin Stone, sometimes hot. I mean, through 5-plus no-hit innings against mm-hmm. the Padres, sometimes really cold. Doesn't get out of the second inning of starts, so that's kind of iffy. Long relief looks a little shaky right now in terms of numbers and who they can trust. Walker Buehler is throwing his 3rd rehab start. I think he'll be ready within 2 weeks, maybe on a pitch count, but he'll be there, and then they'll wait for Dustin May to get there. So the Dodgers right now are not what I think the Dodgers are going to be. I never expected the Dodgers to be 11-7 at this point, considering how well they played during the Cactus League. Angels, looks like they got some stars in the making. Mike Trout, red hot start. This is vintage Mike Trout. Cross your fingers, keep him in the field. Logan Ohapi, the catcher, he can hit. They're waiting for Zach Nito, who got hurt in spring training at shortstop, to find himself. He hit .296 last season. Reed Detmer, 3-0 start, 1.04 ERA. This is a number one pick who got thrown into the rotation each of the last 2 seasons, and suddenly, bingo, he's taken that next step forward. They need starting pitching help. Anthony Rendon is still batting in the 170s, getting booed every time his home plate. They won some games early. Now they got smacked around at home by the Bo Sox. So the Angels, I just don't think, have enough talent. So we'll see what kind of season it's going to be for Ron Washington. So your comment on the Padres, your comment on the Dodgers, your comment on the Halos.
Love everything about this series up in L.A. I mean, the Padres look terrific. Jackson Merrill was great on Friday. You know, he got the game-winning hit, made the diving catch. And last night's – and the huge comeback on Friday was incredible. Last night's game was great, but I do have to make a comment. It seems that – you know, after the game, social media, even some talk radio folks are just whining about the ESPN coverage of this game and how they were like pumping up the Dodgers and Dodgers this, Dodgers that. I hate hearing that from San Diego Padre fans because it makes us look like, you know, the little sister in San Diego.
Cry, baby.
Exactly. That's what it sounds like. We should be saying we went up there to the Padres went up there to Dodger Stadium, kicked ass, took 2 out of 3.
After having won one in South Korea.
Yes. Yeah, split with them there. They've won 2 series, you know, in a row in Dodger Stadium. This feels good. It's not the World Series. You know, it's still April, yada, yada. But
small sample size.
Small sample size, but still, it's good news. And, you know, if you had Trent Grisham batting instead of Jackson Merrill, I mean, he would have struck out, grounded into a double play. I mean, there's a lot here to really like. Michael King is interesting. His ball has a lot of movement. You know, the way he throws kind of, how do you say that? He kind of throws over his left shoulder to a degree. I think he'll sort out a little bit. He's still a rocky. Waldron looked really good as a fifth starter. So there's a lot to be optimistic. Manny is hitting home runs again. Fernando looked good. We just got to get Xander going a little bit more, and I think we're going to be fine.
And Profar has had a good week. Now, whether that continues, because Profar is what Profar is, which is a 236 lifer. But right now he's hitting about 321 and he's popping the ball, and maybe everybody should insult Profar a little bit more and motivate him.
He's the, boy, they say, the professor of good vibes, man. So yeah. I'm so happy for Profar that he's successful. And, you know, we all had low expectations this season of what he was going to do in left field. He's been terrific. I mean, I'd rather have Profar than Tommy Pham, wouldn't you?
And Tommy Pham's going to last place Chicago on a minor league contract.
Exactly.
So. What'd you think about my commentary about the Dodgers and the Halos?
Well, the Dodgers are loaded. Yeah, those top three. I mean, Mookie Betts is amazing. Yeah. I mean, every time he gets up, he never makes a mistake. He always hits the ball hard somewhere. 2-strike count. He'll hit a double. He'll hit a home run. And he's so little. I mean, he's like, what, 5'9"? Something
he's
like that.
He's a powder keg, though.
Oh, but he's incredible. You know, Otani's amazing. Freddie Freeman, terrific. Will Smith, I mean, granted, yeah, he took a shot at Profar, this irrelevant comment. But that dude's pretty solid, too, you know? So you look at that whole lineup. Then you see Gavin Lux, you know, because they've been talking about him forever coming up from the minors. And sure, he blew out his knee last year. But he doesn't look like he's anything special, at least not yet.
Not yet. He's not hitting the ball, and that's the reason he's in the Dodger lineup, because he's hit everywhere. And before he had that bad knee injury that wiped out all the last season, he was a pretty productive bat. So give him time. Let's just see. Dodger pitching, they got their dinged right now. You know, Yamamoto, Yoshi, he gives you good 4 or 5 innings, but unfortunately, bullpen has kind of blown up there. So I think the Dodgers, their best baseball is still ahead of them. But I am a little surprised they're sitting there at 11-7.
Yeah. Well, they just lost 2 out of 3, so it's still early. I'm just really liking the whole energy around the Padres. Sure. I think they look great. But going back to the Dodgers too, Max Muncy, dude, that guy always kills the Padres. Yeah. And he had another home run yesterday. But what about Chris Taylor? I mean, that guy has always been very productive. He's like falling off a cliff this year.
Batting average last I checked on Sunday was .033. How's that possible from a veteran?
That makes no sense to me. It's unbelievable. And then last night, the Dodgers walked 14 guys.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not sustainable. No. I mean, Dave Roberts must have been pulling what little hair he had left, it out.
And they had to go to the bullpen early, and the bullpen looks fatigued, and some of those guys got health issues, and they're pitching. It's going to get better, but it's not where it could be right now.
You know who looked good was Daniel Hudson. You know, and he had been coming back from injuries.
He's had 2 new surgeries.
But he looked really sharp. I think he struck out the side on Saturday night in his one inning of performance. So, yeah, I mean, Dodger fans have got to be feeling good. But, you know, as far as the Angels go, it's just hard to, you know, jump on board with those guys with all the mess with Artie Moreno and everything else. But love seeing, you know, Reed Detmers having some success. So that's something that you can hang a hat on.
But you can't pitch him every day of the week. And he's grown into it. I give him a lot of credit there.
Yeah.
Okay, we go from baseball. And again, you want to join us on Fans Forum? You got a question, comment, agree with us, or think we're full of garbage? Let us know your thoughts. I do like Padre resilience. They've shown a lot more of that type of emotion than we saw early. Let's go from there. Let's talk NFL football off the field.
Okay, here we go with OJ. And oh my God, I mean, there were so many comments on your comments about OJ.
Nice headline you got there. That's what this whole storyline is all about. Legendary career in the NFL, unbelievable career in television and then a tragic ending and a lost life and career. He had everything and he lost everything. You know, I thought about this over the weekend while I was on a jet plane coming home. The trial of the century, to me, was the fraud of the century. That was the most amazing outcome of that long extended situation. It was almost as if hero worship got the jury's vote. Because the more I read in background and refreshed my memory, that there was DNA everywhere. His DNA at Nicole Brown's apartment, the blood and the hair and all that at OJ's place. And yet he was innocent. Hung jury. There was blood. There was clothing. There was fibers in both homes. We had the white Bronco. We had the suicide note. We had the dirty cop who influenced the outcome, talking about this Mark Furman story.
Oh, that guy.
You know, then he was acquitted. Then he was sued. And then he lost that lawsuit. And he owed the Nicole Brown family an enormous amount of money. And then he was arrested again. And he was involved in armed robbery, sports memorabilia, 9 years in prison on this armed robbery charge. I think the most shocking aspect in just refreshing my memory of what it seems like it was 100 years ago, the history of domestic abuse, that man towards that woman, 63 phone calls came from Nicole Brown Simpson to the police in Brentwood and in L.A., about domestic abuse incidents in that house, 63 times. Hmm. And he was never charged, and he was running the streets. And then the end result, she died, Ron Goldman died. That's the most stunning thing. I'll say something that nobody's going to like. Not a lot of people will agree. Hacksaw's haters will line up immediately. O.J. Simpson ran away from everybody in the NFL. I'm sorry, O.J. Simpson cannot run away from the hell that he's going to live in now in wherever he is right now. What an awful, awful story. And I interviewed him a couple of times. At the end result, I think it's just unbelievably awful person. And there's a lot of people in sports that feel, I think, the same way I do. What he stood for, he never became as a person away from football. And look how it all ended up. Agree or disagree with me, John? You have the floor.
Well, I agree with much of what you said. I think there was a lot of blame to go around in that trial. I mean, the way the police managed the evidence was just, you know, a total cluster. Mm-hmm. Did he commit the murder? Probably he did. There were so many signals that he did. But you ever wonder if, and granted, this is not an excuse, just a question. Do you think there was CTE going on involved here that caused him to be so violent, you know, at home with his wife that led to this? Some people have said it was roid rage. I mean, so it makes you wonder if some of these problems with the football played a role in what happened with OJ.
I think there's potential there, but he was a druggie at the end of his career. He was a druggie. He was a problem person when he was at USC. He may have been John McKay's legendary star running back, but there was a lot of junk off the field that they hid that he could have been charged with. You know, he had been married prior, and that didn't work out. And then this situation. And I have no doubt that he was heavily involved in all types of substance abuse post-NFL career. Despite being a star on TV and despite being a marketing guy, a whiz for all the advertisers that want to be linked to him. And then he became toxic and then he became untouchable. And then his life just obviously went off the deep end. So, yeah, I think there's just a lot of things. I think history now writes great running back, not so great person.
Yeah, I mean, a fabulous running back, but a terrible person. But isn't it amazing how he was such a good guy in the media on Monday Night Football, you know, everything he did. I mean, he was in The Towering Inferno, my first PG movie that I saw. He was a superstar. He was in the limelight, Hollywood.
He had it all.
He had it all, but he had this dark side, this. So it's like a Jekyll and Hyde bipolar thing. And again, just really, really crazy. I mean, so I think for so many of us, we kind of put the whole OJ thing to bed. Now he passed away, it kind of resurfaced again. You called his passing a tragic event. A lot of people on social media said tragic. It wasn't tragic that OJ died.
He was a tragedy as a person.
Well, clearly.
The people that he impacted.
Yes.
Okay, fans forum chat box is open. You got an opinion on this OJ Simpson story. Feel free to jump on board because we're going to try to sample as many as we can going forward. A couple of other NFL notes, John. We're a week and a half away from the National Football League draft.
Yeah, the draft is coming, and there's more wheeling and dealing going on, Lee.
Yeah, rumors everywhere. Let's just try to walk through the latest. I'll give you another idea or two of things that have just developed. Chargers are taking trade offers to trade out of number 5. Of course, Jim Harbaugh says if there are 4 quarterbacks gone early, we'd then eventually have the number 1 pick of any really quality player we want because we don't need a quarterback. Not sure what's fact or fiction about the trade down, but I do believe the general manager, Joe Ortiz, the ex-Baltimore Raven guy who's worked this draft board a lot, Ortiz is going to make the decision. Arizona's playing the Price is Right. They need help lots of places. They want multiple draft picks. They're willing to trade out of number 4. The Giants are trying to trade from number 6. They're trying to trade up so that they could be a dealer maybe for the Arizona pick. At number 4, the question is, what kind of resources do the Giants have to give away if they're going to try to go from 6, maybe up to 4? Minnesota's shopping 11 and 23 and something else. They're trying to get inside the top 4. They're going to take one of the quarterbacks. Interesting storyline in the Raider Nation. Tom Telesco has the final say on trades. On the roster, it's not Antonio Pierce. They may have dialogue. It will be Telesco's draft. Mark Davis made that announcement over the weekend. And by the way, Mark Davis has told Telesco, I'm willing to sign off. If you think you can go from 13 to the top 4 to get a quarterback, I'm willing to give up this year's number 1 and next year's number 1 to make that happen. So the Raiders might be back in the play because Davis is willing to give up 2 number 1s. Here's the most unique story that's just developed. New York Jets are at 10. The Jets are talking about trading back, which would mean somebody who suddenly is enthralled with Michael Penix from Washington might try to jump over somebody else, trade up to the Jets pick at number 10. So keep an eye on this. Will it be the Broncos? Would the Broncos jump from 12, take the Jets pick and take Penix? Would the Raiders at 13, if they can't go high, do something creative? And Telesco, he jumps in and gets that draft pick away from the New York Jets at 10 to take Michael Penix. Bo Nix is still out there. Seattle, for some reason, all of a sudden, very interested, met with Bo Nix over the weekend. So that's where we are. We're waiting to see who fires the first shot in terms of a trade because I think we're going to get 4 quarterbacks taken right at the top. And I think Chicago's staying where they are. Obviously, Washington's trying to figure out which guy, but they're going to take a quarterback at 2. New England evidently is going to take one of those quarterbacks at 3. And then the crazy stuff could happen with Arizona, with the Chargers, with the Giants who want to jump over people. And then what happens with all of a sudden these teams in the back thinking, hey, let me get to number 10. Maybe I get the shot at Michael Penix. It's going to be fascinating. The day of the draft, the evening of the draft, as this thing starts.
You know, it's interesting that Mark Davis weighed in and said, I'm willing to trade our first round pick to this year and next year to move up. But I look at these guys. I mean, Caleb Williams going to the Bears, that seems like a lock. And then the questions are around, what, Jaden Daniels, right? I always want to say Jaden McDaniels, who's a basketball player.
Well, yeah, Jaden Daniels.
Yeah.
Drake May. J.J. McCarthy.
And then Penix and Nix. But are any of those guys like a generational talent, someone that you want to, you know, give up the farm to go draft? I mean, none of these guys are like John Elway.
No, but how many have been?
Right.
But we've seen what the NFL's become. Look, Lamar Jackson had all types of blotches on his style when he was at Louisville. Has evolved into a superstar in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. Those quarterbacks are out there. Caleb Williams probably got the potential to do that. You know, and lost in the conversation about Chicago is they got heavy-duty running backs, and now they've got 2 wide receivers. They traded for DJ Moore, and then they traded for the Chargers' great veteran wide receiver. So all of a sudden, they got components offensively, and you're going to drop Caleb Williams into that situation, which I think Bears' personality as a football team on offense is going to be drastically different because of the two wide receivers they traded for. They're three deep at running back, and now you can put that quarterback in there. Could be an instant star in the making.
Isn't it interesting, too, how Chicago's the second largest city in America, yet the Bears have been crap for decades?
Yeah.
You know, they won the Super Bowl. It was amazing in the mid-'80s there with Dicka and all those guys, the Fridge. But why have they been just so rotten for so long?
Never had good quarterbacking. Mm-hmm. It's always been that way. I mean, even the defense carried the monsters of the Midway in the 1985 when they stomped the New England Patriots with their great defense. And Jim McMahon was adequate. Jim McMahon was not going to throw for 4,500 yards, but they did have Walter Payton. But, you know, they probably have had the worst quarterbacking in modern day NFL football. Maybe Detroit has been in that mix up until recently. But, you know, the Bears, because it's snowy and cold and windy, so and the theory is we don't need to throw it. We're just going to run and play defense because of the weather.
Well, didn't the Bears give up a lot of picks to go draft, was it Trubisky? You know, and yeah, they made a lot of other failed experiments there, but it's just incredible. Usually you think the big city teams are the ones that are going to have the resources, the smarts, the passionate fans to get the thing done. But it seems like the Bears are always bungling.
Yeah, they've not had a good run in leadership. And, you know, they've not been big players in free agency. And that's got to do with ownership of the McCaskey family, which sometimes has not been held in high esteem. Okay, last football topic on the table before we get to halftime.
Okay, so more developments here with Rashee Rice and the Chiefs.
Yeah, this is really bad. He has been banned from the Kansas City OTA workouts that began today. He cannot take part in any type of on-field weight training, can't be in the facility. He has now been charged with 8 felonies. The aftermath of the police investigation after the bad auto accident, he speed drag racing with a football player from SMU that he's friends with. They upgraded the 8 traffic counts to felonies. Rice was doing 119 miles an hour at the time of the crash. The SMU wide receiver was clocked at 116 miles an hour. He could be facing anywhere from 3 to 10 years in prison because he left the scene of an accident of injured people. That's a felony. He is going to be suspended from the NFL. It could be a year once the legalities are put in place. So he's in big trouble, and this is a huge blow to Andy Reid because he fast-forwarded development last year. He caught 73 passes the second half of the season. He was a monster. And just the stupidity of the person is shocking. To be doing 119 miles an hour, drag racing a friend from SMU who's doing 116, and crashing into 4 different cars, injuring people, and then leaving the wrecks and walking away. And days later, hires a lawyer who says, well, you all made mistakes when you were young. Not me. I didn't do that.
Yeah.
He's in monster trouble with the National Football League once Dallas police get done with him. I don't think there'll be a plea bargain here.
Again, more stuff outside the lines. I mean, what do you think is worse, this gambling story involving Ohtani and Mizuhara, or just Mizuhara, or is this Rashee Rice problem the big story, is the biggest crime, or is it Julio Urias? I mean, which is the most egregious, outrageous story of them all?
Well, I think the gambling thing, because that questions the integrity of the event.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big issue. We had another story coming up here we're going to talk about momentarily in the second half of our podcast. But I think the integrity issue, the stupidity of some people, a.k.a. Rice, obviously the inability of Urias to follow the rules. It's just crazy stuff out there, but we have to cover the stories. We're going to give you opinions about the stories.
Yes.
We talk about the greatness of Ohtani, but we have to talk about the scandal that dragged Ohtani into the middle of it. So those are topics on the table. Hey, we get to halftime. Our podcast is brought to you by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Centers. There are 9 stores to serve you. You know, I put windows in my house in Rancho Bernardo. John's got a front door that looks like it came from a castle. We did our business at Dixie Line. If you're renovating, if you're rebuilding, you got projects, bookcases, bathrooms, kitchen, cabinets, etc., stuff outside, patio, and the pool, John, where did you go? It's where I went.
Yeah, so Dixieline, you know, and they have a great paint department there. You know, if you've got to paint your kid's room or, you know, kind of update your kitchen, just go in there, show them some samples. They'll take care of you. They got all the accessories, too.
Consultants, that's what you need. Then the materials, they've got them all. These guys, Dixieline Lumber. And our podcast is brought to you by North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. We all need help with our eyes, whether it's just the vision test, new glasses, contact lenses. But if you got more serious things like pink eye, if you're concerned about glaucoma, if you're worried about cataracts, you need to deal with the professionals at North County Eye Center, Poway and Escondido. They've been in business since the 1970s here in the North County. When you need help with your eyes, just remember the name North County Eye Center. We go to the second half of our Monday bonus podcast. A reminder, when we are done with topics on the table, you're going to take over the show. He created this. It's his fault, his responsibility. John Riley, Fans Forum, explain it to all of our followers.
Well, hey, for all of you that are jumping on board already, terrific. The Winnipeg folks have just blown in. You know, they got all kinds of comments. So if you have a question about the world of sports, you got a comment about O.J. Simpson or Rashee Rice or Shohei Ohtani, just type it in the live chat on Facebook, YouTube, or on X, and we'll get you involved in Fans Forum.
And a reminder, I write sports every day. Have you checked my website? Why have you not checked my website? I want you to subscribe to my website. It's right there, LeeHacksawHamilton.com. Also, when you punch it up right there on the homepage, there's a big orange box. Fill out the information. Join Hacksaw's Insiders Group. Then you will get on our email list. It's absolutely free. And like everything else, we want you to share. Tell everybody what we're doing Mondays and Thursdays in the podcast, what we're doing with the website. Want you to subscribe. You'll get all the alerts every time we add something to our YouTube channel, even if it's at 3 o'clock in the morning because some guys don't go to bed. You'll get the alerts. Of what we're doing. So we thank you for being part of it. Hope you'll help us expand. Give us thumbs up. Hey, give us a 5-star rating because we think what we're doing here is pretty bleeping brilliant. Let's go to the second half. John, we got some different college stories to talk about.
Yeah, so the Aztecs, they're doing spring football right now. How are they looking on the field?
Okay, there's two storylines at San Diego State. Let's start with Aztec football. This is their final week of spring football. They'll play their spring game. This all-new Aztec Fast, Aztec Air offense will be on public display on Saturday on the 20th in the afternoon at Snapdragon Stadium. It's going to be interesting to see if this town responds to that guy, Sean Lewis. I'm really disappointed. I don't tell people how to spend their money, but you haven't given this guy a chance. Do you know in year one, going to Snapdragon Stadium, they sold a record 15,790 season tickets, all-time high. It's absolutely amazing. Year three, coming to this fall, they sold 8,100 plus.
Yeah.
That's like a 50% drop almost. That's terrible. And that comes, even though they cut ticket prices by 20%. You know, this is a great football city. Where are the football fans? Where are the displaced Charger fans? Sean Lewis brings with him an unbelievable offensive reputation. Give this guy a chance. And they sold only 8,116 season tickets as of this weekend. Jeez. What's wrong with football fan in San Diego? That's my response. Basketball. Recruiting. Aztecs need bigs. Aztecs think they have two scholarships, might have a third. They brought in a 6'8 forward from Bowling Green, big guy who can rebound and shoot, Rashawn Ajiy. They brought in a 6'3 shooting guard from Florida Atlantic, Nick Boyd, and they're trying to convince the leading scorer at Fresno State, Xavier Ducell, a 6'4 guard, to come in. The problem that I realize, and I realized this last year, with all the great success the Aztecs have had, they're not on the same basketball court, playing field, and the NIL money with anybody else. They can't go get a big that wants to transfer out of Kansas or some of these other places. They're settling for the best at what they can get to come here with the dollars that they have. And that's why the NIL is impacted San Diego State, despite the unbelievable accomplishments of Brian Dutcher and the phenomenal reputation of coaching players up and getting them ready to go to the NBA. So I'm kind of disappointed for San Diego State as to where they're sitting right now in terms of recruitment. So, John, you're at the podium. Your comment on season tickets, Aztec football, your comment on hoops.
Well, let's talk hoops first. I think, the Aztecs just increased their prices 20% again.
For
basketball.
Oh, okay.
For basketball,
yes.
They increased the price because I think a portion of that increase is going to go into the NIL bucket, which I think is a good thing, you know? And so we've got to kind of keep building that. It's still shocking to me that San Diego, sixth largest city in America, doesn't have a lot of support. But, you know, really, there are very few big corporations that are here, so that plays a role. I'd love to see the Aztecs sign Bryce Pope out of UC San Diego. That kid can hit long distance shots. He'd be like a Caitlin Clark almost for the guys. As far as football goes, I think I'm interested in Sean Lewis. I'm intrigued. I like the optimism, but I'm kind of wait and see, you know, because last year the Aztecs were just so horrible at times, so difficult to watch. Now let's see what this coach does. But if they create a winner, I guarantee the fans will show up just like they do at Viejas Arena.
All you need to do is Google Sean Lewis Kent State football video. You'll be stunned at what they do offensively. You know, that's why I think Saturday's scrimmage will just be a sneak preview of how fast they play and the route trees they run and the quarterbacks. That'll be wide open competition when summer camp opens. But give this guy a chance, because I know what he did at Kent State. And Kent State was so far off the radar, like another solar system, how bad the program had slipped. And he flipped that sucker in 2 years. That's what got him the Colorado offensive coordinator's job. And so now he's brought that playbook it's a brand new roster. I think he's got 7 or 8 new starters on offense because so many guys transferred. And obviously a massive rebuild job defensively.
You're such a Mac guy. I like it.
Yeah. So, hey, you're an Aztec fan. Why does our community not support San Diego State football? 8,100 season tickets after having sold well over 15,000 the first year the stadium opened. We go from football and college. Let's talk NBA hoops.
Playoffs are starting right now, and it's going to be good. The play-in games are going on, Lee. So what do you think the Lakers and Clippers are going to be like this year?
NBA play-in games begin tomorrow.
Cool.
The Lakers went into New Orleans in a game that they both needed and absolutely collapsed the Pelicans. Pelicans look like dogs. That's terrible. Zion Williamson making all that money just played garbage. Lakers are rolling. They've won 10 of their last 13. Got to stay healthy. Anthony Davis back flared on him a little bit at the end of the Sunday win. LeBron is playing out of his mind. He had 13 assists in the first half to go with 13 points. He was phenomenal. Austin Reeves has had an unbelievable second half. He's just playing possessed right now. And this is the kid that we saw play like that last year. He had a kind of a slow start. When D'Angelo Russell is hot, you can't control him. When he's cold, he goes 3 for 13. And they're getting some decent performances some nights, not all nights, from Rui Hachimura and Spencer Dinwiddie. I just think the Lakers right now are rolling. Clippers, I'd be concerned. They're limping to the finish line. Kawhi Leonard has now missed 8 games in a row with knee inflammation, the same knee that's had the 2 surgeries. Paul George has had more knee issues. He sat out over the weekend. James Harden has not played for the last 3 games because of foot complications. And as good as they are when they're totally healthy, they got to play Luka Doncic, Kyrie Irving, and the 50-win Dallas Mavericks in the first round. That's going to be a fun series to watch because I don't think anybody's going to play any defense in that series, but that series is so hard. And for the Lakers, you know, they got to play in New Orleans again tomorrow night. The question is, are the Pelicans going to show up or they get the doors blown off and run into the parking lot again? But the Lakers, they're going to have to play on the road. That's the problem. There's no home court advantage for the Lakers now because of where they finished 8th. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a challenge. And I think from a Laker perspective, can they physically, can those 2 superstars play best of seven series because there's hardly any nights off. And those guys have to play to the limit every game for the Lakers to be good. So, John, do not shoot an air ball on this. What do you believe in? Lakers? How much trouble the Clippers in?
Well, I mean, who do I believe in versus who I'm rooting for are very different. I think you're right. I think the Lakers are looking terrific now. But isn't this is like the second year in a row they've kind of snuck into the back end of the playoffs?
But last year they got to the Western Finals with Denver.
They did. So it makes me wonder, do they just sort of take the regular season in stride? They just say, you know, just get into the playoffs. Doesn't matter what our seed is. And then we'll turn it on in April and May. Do you think that's what they're thinking?
I don't think you can afford to do that. I don't think you can flip the switch back on. No, they got to the Western Finals last year because LeBron and AD just carried them.
Oh, yeah.
But can LeBron and AD do that in a best-of-five series where you hardly get any nights off, or best-of-seven where you're playing every other night and there's no stopping? So it's going to be a challenge. The Western playoffs are just going to be crazy. Now, Milwaukee's got problems. Giannis has got this calf issue. They don't know that he is going to be ready. But, geez, you look at some of the other teams in the West, and if Golden State hits 26 threes in a game like they did last week while I was gone,
yeah.
But that doesn't happen very often.
Well, how about the Thunder in Oklahoma City? Oh. I mean, they're having a hell of a year, and they're so darn young. So, yeah, there's a lot of great storylines here. I am rooting for the Clippers. I worked for the Clippers when they played in San Diego, you know, back when I was a college student. So I've always kind of had a soft spot in my heart for the team. I would love for them to have a successful playoff run. But like you said, if Kawhi isn't playing, I mean, they don't have a chance.
Yeah. And tell you what, Golden State, Sacramento, that's that other play-in series. They start this week, too. That's going to be fun. Because
well, they went seven games last year or the year before.
Yeah, they do. One other NBA note. This is really bad. Again, we have to talk about off the court. There could be a lifetime suspension coming to a Toronto Raptor. Jontay Porter is the brother of Michael Porter, Denver Nuggets superstar. He is being investigated for a high amount of betting on him as a player through DraftKings and these other websites based on minutes played. And there are insinuations that when he was playing, he faked an injury and faked an illness. So he would come out of the game in under 4 minutes. And a large amount of money was bet on these games for Dante Porter, rookie, coming off the bench, playing less than 4 minutes. All of a sudden, these red flags went up.
Yeah.
Why is all this money getting poured in for a backup rookie player as to playing time? The NBA just asked the Colorado Gaming Commission to look at all the betting sites. Betting is legal up there. And see if there are other events in which there were big amounts of money placed on Toronto Raptor games wrapped around Porter's playing time. There's a theory that he orchestrated all this. And if he did, he will be expelled from basketball for his life. It's a really, really ugly story.
Wow, I didn't know about this. This is new. The NBA should take swift action. But it is funny, like, who bets on the minutes played of any player, you know, much less a backup rookie guy, like 12th man on the bench kind of thing. They got to crack down hard on this. But it does make you wonder, you know, how much influence can one player have in swinging a point spread? In this case, a minutes played, they have a little more control over that because they can fake it. But yeah, NBA players, man, this is a huge problem, especially after the scandal with that ref about
Tim Donahue.
What was that, like 20 years ago, wasn't it?
And it also spins back to, I know you're going to stand up and start screaming, oh, the NBA's taking all that money from FanDuel and DraftKings. Look what the hell we got going on now.
Well, yeah,
exactly. Because that's where all these bets were being placed.
Yes, I think betting on sports is good, generally speaking. It makes the sports more interesting. People have more vested interest. But you don't want the players involved in it at all, period, exclamation point. And so the NBA definitely has to police it. And hopefully they take swift action.
I mean, for the commissioner to come out and make the comment, the player being investigated could be expelled for life.
Yeah.
If he's implemented. He made the comment before the investigation was done.
Yeah. Good for him. That's what he should say.
Pretty serious. Let's go from that. Hockey Hotline is open. This is an amazing story.
Yeah, the Hockey Hotline. I think we're talking here a little bit about the Coyotes. Are they making a move, Lee?
Arizona is moving, and this came out from behind the curtain. They have struggled since the early 2000s, dating all the way back to when Wayne Gretzky was part owner of the Arizona Coyotes, and his co-owner went into bankruptcy. They have struggled with ownership, money, quality of team on the ice and arena situations. They had hoped that they were going to be able to make a bid on a 110-acre parcel of land on Scottsdale, right on the 101 freeway. And then the mayor of Scottsdale says, we don't want you here. And that eventually, within 24 hours, led to the demise of the franchise. The owners in Salt Lake City, the guy that owns the Utah Jazz, Ryan Smith, very successful entrepreneur, has been meeting behind the curtain with the NHL and worked out a deal with Gary Bettman. Bettman, at this point, has given up on the Phoenix market because they just can't get an arena built, and they need an arena. And the union's been raising holy hell about the conditions the players have to live and exist in, playing in a small college arena. And the product hasn't been very good either. So what they've indicated is the NHL is buying the Coyotes from Alex Marullo, the owner, for $1 billion. They will sell it to Ryan Smith in Salt Lake City for $1.3 billion. As part of the deal, there will be renovations to the Delta Center to make it more hockey-friendly. They have given Marullo the $1 billion for the sale. He will have a 5-year window to build an arena, and they have guaranteed him if they get it done, he will get an expansion franchise. And you would ask, why would Gary Bettman do this? Well, it's a marketplace of $3.5 million. Mm-hmm. Huge. It's a marketplace in which a lot of transplants, many from Western Canada. What do they bring with them? Everything they own and their interest in hockey.
Yeah.
So that's the reason they're not vacating the market. I feel terrible. I have friends in Quebec City. Quebec used to have the Nordique, which was a great franchise. They had economic issues. The arena was too small. They have a new arena. Quebec City doesn't get any love from the NHL, and I don't understand it because it's Canada. And in Canada, it's all things hockey. And they would sell out every bloody game, and the rivalry with the Montreal Canadiens and the Toronto Maple Leafs would be reestablished. Why the NHL refuses to look at the Quebec City market just absolutely drives me crazy. But that's where we are. Coyotes will be in Salt Lake City. It'll be good for the players. They will be welcomed. You know, it is a unique market. They do have the Utah Jazz. They do have the Utah Utes going into the Big 12. But they think it'll be a pretty good hockey regional franchise. But I feel really badly for the people of Quebec City. John, your turn. Take a slap shot.
It's a slap shot. Well, first of all, I think this is a good move because they had to get out of Phoenix with that stadium or the arena and the mess. Salt Lake's a nice place to be. I mean, that metropolitan area isn't as big as Phoenix, but it's not too far behind it.
San Diego would have been a nice place to be if we had an arena.
Well, that's coming, you know, and apparently Kroenke is saying he wants to bring the NHL to San Diego. But how many people live in Quebec City? I mean, is it 500,000 maybe?
Yeah, but it's a region. It's a huge population region, whether you think it's French separatist, which I think it is, but it doesn't matter. They are hockey fans. I mean, the biggest religion in the province of Quebec is Catholicism.
Yes.
Right behind hockey.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I hear you there. But, you know, I'm sure the NHL thinks of Salt Lake as a more profitable market for the league overall than in Quebec City. That has to be part of this, right?
I don't know. The O Canada group that's joined us, if you want to jump in on Fans Forum, do you think Quebec City deserves a franchise? Because we got NHL teams in every other major city. I happen to think Quebec City is a major city. John, last topic on the table before we wrap this thing up. What we saw, green jacket and golf.
Yeah, I mean, Scottie Scheffler had a great run in Augusta.
Superstar status. He has now won his second Masters. He took the lead Saturday. He fought off the challenges. He never wilted. Scottie Scheffler, 7 birdies as they tried to hunt him down. Everybody else self-destructed. Course was really tough to play. He didn't make any mistakes. He finishes 11 under at Augusta. Max Homa, Tommy Fleetwood just could not keep up with him. Bryson DeChambeau, who started very quickly, faded really badly. He wound up at -2. Rory McIlroy just couldn't keep up for 4 days. He wound up at 4 over. Phil Mickelson was 8 over. Koepka and Ram from the LIV finished at 9 over. And then there's this story about Tiger. Worst Masters of all time. Tiger Woods finished at 16 over. He finished 27 strokes behind Scottie Scheffler. Saturday, he was limping up and down the hills. 8 bogeys, 2 double bogeys. Sunday, 3 bogeys and a triple bogey into the water that ended the weekend. I'm going to say some things here that probably will offend a few people. This is so sad to see. The greatness is gone. He's been done in by his injuries and obviously his age. He was done in prior to that by his lifestyle decisions, the broken marriages, the mistresses, the lawsuits, the drugs, the alcohol, the unexplained car accidents, the lives and cover-ups. Why not retire? Why not step away from the PGA Tour where you can't compete and go to the Champions Tour? The Champions Tour is 54 holes. The Champions Tour, a lot of guys, just like Tiger Woods, looking at the sunset of their career, but are still very popular figures. Champions Tour courses are different, laid out, and a lot easier to play. Why not go to TV if you don't want to go on the Champions Tour? I know his competitive fires burn, but you know what? This is terrible to say. We shouldn't have to see this. I just don't like seeing superstars trying to compete when they can't compete. Your favorite baseball player, great career, is hitting 171. Your NFL quarterback of all time has thrown 26 interceptions. He needs to step away. I don't want to see this become a pity party, and that's what it's becoming. Every third month when Tiger is ready to jump back in and try to play four rounds. He's not competitive. 27 strokes behind the leader at the greatest tournament of all time. You agree or disagree?
Yeah, I don't really pay attention to Tiger as a golfer anymore. He's more interesting as like a celebrity TMZ kind of guy and all the stuff that he's been going through. And it's just sort of, oh, he was at the Masters. I didn't know that. Or you barely saw him a few times. So I don't know. Yeah, you're right. It's time for him to turn the page. I mean, he's not going to ever be competitive again. He's not going to win another major again. I mean, what did he tie Jack Nicklaus's record on the majors? How did that go down?
I'm trying to think. He's got 15 Grand Slam events, I believe.
Yeah.
But it's been forever.
Yeah, and he's not going to get another one.
No.
I mean, there's no way that's going to happen. I mean, the one with the last one was probably the U.S. Open here in San Diego.
Could you imagine if he did TV? That would be cool as an
artist.
Yeah. Yeah. Or if he wants to continue to play, there's so many guys that have left the PGA because of age, gone to the Champions Tour, and did well. I just hate the thought of looking at this guy dragging his leg up and down the hills. It's like a pity party. I don't want to see that. It's just not who he should be remembered as.
Yeah, it shouldn't. But I think we do have to give our props to Scottie Scheffler.
The only superstar left on the PGA Tour, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he was terrific. I mean, and when he'd fade back a little bit, man, he'd jump ahead again. And it made the last day. It wasn't as exciting or as thrilling of a finish as I was hoping. Of course, I keep track of our local guy, Xander Schauffele, and he crept into the top five score bug there for a little while on Sunday, but then he faded back. But you know, props to Scheffler. I mean, what a great run he's having.
And the LIV guys, MIA.
Yeah,
that was absolutely amazing because they, John Rahm and those guys, they were ready. We're coming. We're going to bring the LIV banner.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't play worth a lick at all. But Scheffler has become the go-to guy to follow on the PGA Tour. We're getting ready for Fans Forum. Our podcast is brought to you by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Centers. 9 stores in San Diego to serve you. You got projects. They've got all the ideas. And by North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. If you need vision tests, you need help with your eyes, you have major problems, think North County Eye Center, Poway and Escondido. Do you think we have a few people have opinions here? Holy cow, look
Holy
at that
cow.
List. Go ahead, John.
All right, let's go to Michael here. Michael's got a problem with you, Hacksaw. He says, there is no criminal investigation of Ohtani. You guys coaching it that way is offensive. It looks like you're just seeking clicks instead of giving honest news reporting. That's not the Lee Hacksaw Hamilton I remember from back in the day.
Oh, Michael, what are you barking about? I gave you all the details of what the 37-page indictment against Muzahara was. We're not creating information. That's the end result of the criminal investigation. Go look it up. 19,000 bets, 25 bets per day, $180 million in losses, the changing of all the account numbers so his advisors never got notification of the large transfers. Those are facts, pal. And by the way, after we gave you the facts, we are entitled to express our opinions. What's the beef, Michael? I don't understand it. Go ahead. John, intercede here.
Well, I don't know.
He's your friend.
These are my friends here. Yeah, exactly. So, it's interesting, too, because so many of the people that are outspoken on this Ohtani case are convinced that he's in on it, that it's a conspiracy. And this is a guy here, Michael, who's kind of going the other way and defending Ohtani. On the surface, it just looks strange, this whole thing. I mean, how could Ohtani, with all this money, not know this is going on? I mean, even picking up vibes about it, because he's with Mizuhara, 24/7? That still strikes me as odd. But as far as you're concerned, you've always reported the facts. I'm probably the one that's bringing up the conspiracy theories.
Well, where did either of us say criminal investigation of Ohtani?
Well, no.
It's Mizuhara.
Exactly.
Michael, I'm sorry you just got picked off first base, but hey, I hope you'll continue to watch us on our podcast. Next question.
Okay, let's go to Gary. He says, Ohtani knew. Big money is spoken. Darvish can strike him out.
Oh, my God.
See?
Conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
The great uneducated, unwashed.
Yes.
But thanks for following. The FBI doesn't think he was involved. So now you're saying the FBI's in the conspiracy. Go ahead. Next question.
Okay, moving on. Let's go here to Schickster. Says, Blue Jays, Lee and John, how are the Blue Jays going to do this year?
They got a lot of bats. They just don't have enough arms. I read a note. Their top young pitcher about a year and a half ago was a kid by the name of Alec Manoah. Pitched really well. Had health issues, shoulder, I believe it was. Didn't pitch well, was up and down in the minor leagues. His name was being out there as being on the trade block. Nobody wanted to take a run at him just because there's questions about his health and his makeup. And they sent him to the minor leagues. And his first start in the minor leagues down in Class A. Do you know the distance, how far Dunedin, Florida, Class A is from Toronto Blue Jay Baseball?
Yeah.
Rogers Place. I think it was 1 2/3 innings, 7 runs. And this is a guy that was projected to maybe be the next great pitcher in Blue Jay history. So I just don't think they have enough arms. I do love their lineup, from Guerrero to Bichette to Biggio to George Springer. I mean, they got bats in a lot of different places, but I just don't think they have enough pitching.
Yeah, I still think this team's going to be in the playoffs. Now, granted, it's a very competitive division with Baltimore and the Yankees, but I just want to make just sort of an off-the-wall comment about the Blue Jays. I love the font they use for the number on the back of their jersey.
Mm-hmm. It's very different.
With the two lines. And it's done very well. It's a great design, and they're not screwing around with it and monkeying around with it. It's been pretty much that way since the start.
Yeah. First game. I saw it on TV. First game they played at, I think it was the old CNE, Canadian National Exhibition Stadium, in a snowstorm.
Oh, my God.
The first Blue Jay game in April of whatever year it was, played in a snowstorm. And they showed they were clearing off the field, and the pitchers and catchers are down by the bullpen throwing snowballs at each other. But the Blue Jays, that's been a really good franchise. Obviously, the Joe Carter-led Blue Jays were just absolutely phenomenal. Oh, Canada, thank you for joining us.
Okay, let's go here to Vin. He says, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. Don't squeeze the juice.
Well, that was the phrase that Johnny Cochran and those guys used, but there's also part of the written description. OJ had a lot of medical issues at that point of his life post-NFL career. He was on a lot of different medications. And one of the theories from a doctor is that he stopped taking some medications and his joints swelled up. He did it intentionally. So his hand would be bigger and he couldn't get it into the glove.
No way.
Well, you're the biggest conspiracy freak I know. I'm just telling you what's been reported.
That's an interesting call.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, guilty as I viewed it. And the thing that really upsets me, and I didn't know this revelation till over the weekend when I went back and did checks, 63 police calls to the Brentwood and L.A. police about domestic violence in that house, him and Nicole. And he was still out running the streets because he was a football hero.
Yeah, that's a two-tier justice system, right, which we talked about before. If there's been 62 cases, there should have been some charges along the way. I think that was in Brentwood, wasn't it?
Yes.
Just right outside of Beverly Hills. Wow, I mean, that seemed like a million years ago, that trial. Now it's all coming back to the surface.
Yeah, well, right now, so I apologize in advance if it offends you. He outran a lot of people in the NFL. He can't outrun the holy hell he's gone to now.
Okay, moving on. Let's go here to John. He says, OJ's dream team might have won the trial of the century, but he lost in the court of public opinion. His worst crime might have given us the Kardashians.
Yeah, the Kardashians and Al Cowens and the White Bronco. And I mean, I think back now, I watched that on TV when I was at 690. We stood in the newsroom, the whole damn staff watched there. And some people say, why is he driving on the freeway? Why don't they pull him off? They pull him off, he'll kill himself. You know, there was a segment that thought that he was going to the cemetery. He's going to kill himself at the cemetery where Nicole was buried. Reality TV? No, that was reality life at that point. Could you imagine if that happened today, social media being what social media is?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah, there'd probably be a TMZ van, like, following the cars on the freeway.
Shooting them going down the high-speed lane. Next question.
Okay, let's go here to David. He says, I didn't realize OJ only paid about $130,000 of the now owed $100 million owed to the Goldman family after the civil lawsuit.
Well, it was $33 million, I believe, was the original lawsuit. But there was interest that has piled on since the 1990s. Now there's a huge war with his estate because the Goldman family says they're going to go back in now because they will value whatever's left in his estate. Mm-hmm. And they want first claims on a chunk of that money rather than go into what's left of his family, his grown kids, etc. Story is not over yet, but obviously he is over.
Makes you wonder what's left in the estate. Can't be much. Okay, let's keep on trucking down here. Let's go to Matt. And he says, junior hockey team USA captain and gold medal winner Rutger McGroarty returning to the University of Michigan for junior year. Thoughts?
He's one of the few. The outpouring of players jumping from college hockey, signing their first entry-level contracts is absolutely staggering. And the transfer portal is open, and there has been an enormous movement of players from Division I schools right after the Frozen Four ended. Denver University upset Boston College over the weekend to win the NCAA, they call it Frozen Four championship. I bet, because I have access to that, I bet there have been 30 Division I transfers of players who've left places like Minnesota Duluth or left Hockey East schools and are just relocating, and NIL money is probably part of that equation. Yeah, there are good hockey players, and there's a lot jumping into the portal now. There's a whole pile of kids who were drafted who are coming to the NHL on entry-level contracts this week. The Anaheim Ducks just signed the leading goal scorer in all of college hockey, Cutter Gauthier, who they got from the Philadelphia Flyers in midseason in a controversial trade for Jamie Drysdale. He is going to make his debut this week in the final game that the Ducks have on their schedule. So, and virtually every team in the league is signing all their draft picks out of college hockey. But then there'll be a whole pile of kids who get drafted out of high school that'll be diving into college hockey at least for one season. The movement is just phenomenal. I think the Ducks have now signed 5 draft picks who had stayed in college hockey, took them all and signed them in the last 10 days to 2 weeks. It takes time to get them. Cutter Gauthier, 38 goals at Boston College, all-time leading scorer, the leading scorer college hockey this season.
Well, this is interesting how they draft a player, but then they still have the rights, but they go back to college.
Or they can go back to junior hockey.
To junior hockey.
Yeah.
Okay, but wasn't the Larry Bird drafts kind of like that? Didn't they draft him like a year in advance?
Yes.
It was something weird like that.
But the rules are so different from one sport to another in terms of underclassmen. I think it's a crapshoot, but this whole thing wound up in the courts back in the 70s into the 80s. That's why there was the birth of the World Hockey Association to compete with the NHL, was that all these young players said, why should I have to stay in junior hockey when I am exceptional? Why can't I, as an 18-year-old, sign a professional contract and start my career? And they went to court, and the court ruled, NHL, you need to change your draft rules. Mm-hmm. The World Hockey Association came on board, and they signed all the underclassmen, all the 18- and 19-year-olds, and they wound up in the WHA, and the WHA rated the NHL for veteran goaltenders. We had 2 18-year-old first-round draft picks from the NHL when I was in Cleveland as the voice of the Crusaders, who were big, young defensemen, and they played, and they got better, and then they all wound up in the NHL when the two leagues merged with what was left in the WHA. But it's a crapshoot. I mean, you're drafting somebody with an idea. Outside of the top pick in the draft, top couple picks in the draft. Those guys could be 3 years away. They could be in college hockey. They could go back to junior. If you're age eligible, you can play in the American hockey. It just takes time to develop. And to me, it's a crapshoot because you're signing all these guys and you don't quite know what you're going to get.
Well, take a look at like a player like McRory compared to, say, someone like Connor Bedard. I mean, they're both young, right?
Mm-hmm. No, Bedard was 18.
Okay.
Bedard was the exception to the rule. He was allowed to play junior hockey, I think, at age 15 or 16. I mean, they have what they call it's like a elite status for a young player. Mm-hmm. And they're allowed to get drafted in the midget draft or the bantam draft in Canada and go play in the Ontario Hockey League or Quebec League or the Western Hockey League. And as a 16-year-old, if you're good enough, try to play and hold up and grow through the process. And Bedard, I think he might have been the first one of the elite status that was allowed two or three years ago to jump into junior hockey at age 16. I mean, you got 16-year-olds playing against an overage junior. It's 21. I mean, that's hard.
Yeah.
That's really hard. So NHL's tried to help the prospect player.
Okay, let's move on. Let's talk a little Chiefs football. Unreal. His career is screwed right now. Rice is done.
Rice is probably going to prison. Now that it's 8 felonies, everything changed. After they did the investigation, they went into the computers and they found out that he was doing 119 miles an hour. And he left the scene of an accident in which injuries occurred. That's a felony. So suddenly all 8 events became felonies. I mean, it's really a bad situation. And how stupid can you be? A, he was renting this Lamborghini SUV at what, $1,700 a day? The guy spent $10,000 and then wrecked it. How stupid is he? Maybe a great football player, past tense. He's going to get suspended by the league for sure, and it'll be interesting to see how much jail time he gets because I don't think you can plea bargain out of felonies.
Well, I mean, who rents a Lamborghini to drive the speed limit? You know, that's why he rented it, which, by the way, I'm surprised he was able to get away with it. Because if you're under 25, I don't think you can rent cars or, you know. But, yeah, what a disgrace. Bad choice. I mean, he's lucky no one was killed in this whole thing.
Exactly. We move on.
Okay, so let's go here to Matt. And he says, does Edmonton Sports Talk ever raid your show? Where's your Jets hoodie?
I've got a Jets hoodie. I have to go find it. It's in the closet. I've got a lot of stuff with NHL crests and logos on it. Yep, you're correct. I will support my guys in Winnipeg because they're obviously supporting us. It was given to me as a gift. I have a New York Ranger jersey when Lady Liberty, the Statue of Liberty, was the logo.
Oh, nice.
It was one really special year. So you go find your California Golden Seals jersey. We'll do a hockey show.
Just as an aside, how did the New York Rangers get the Rangers, you know, mascot? I mean, I get it for the Texas Rangers, but why New York?
That's a great question. You got a computer.
Yeah, I got to look it up.
Smart guy.
Okay.
I don't have, you know, the Rangers don't have a logo. They have a crest.
Mm-hmm.
Just says Rangers.
Right, exactly.
They don't have a mascot.
Right.
It's just a different thing. That's a good question, the makeup of where that nickname came from.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated by nicknames, especially I like it when nicknames have a connection to the city, you know, it makes it a lot better. So anyways, let's move on.
Yeah, Google guy. Just come up with an answer by next week.
I'll come up with an answer. Okay. Angel says, hey, one thing favored the Clips is that game one is at the Crypt. I see the Clippers take this series in 7.
I don't know. Dallas is playing unbelievable. You know, the big guy has just, you know, Luka Doncic just finished all-time, the leading scorer in the league, 33 points per game. Kyrie Williams, as weird as a person as he's been during his other stops in the NBA, when healthy, has played really, really well. They're collectively, that's a pretty dangerous offensive team. And if you got a Clipper team limping in here, I mean, the fact that Kawhi has not practiced and has missed 8 straight games leads me to believe that the issues with the knee inflammation in the knee that had 2 surgeries, that's pretty serious stuff. So how long can he hold up?
Mm.
That's going to be huge. I don't think either one of these teams is going to play defense. I think you're going to be looking at 130 to 126 games, which is cool. I think it'll be a wild playoff series. But they're all on the clock, John. I mean, if they don't get to the Western Finals this year, and the Western Conference is a bitch, They don't get in Western Conference Finals with all these older players, some of whom could be free agents. They ever going to get there?
Yeah, well, I'm rooting for Steve Ballmer, man. Isn't he a great guy?
Oh, I mean, he really is.
He's a good owner. He's got all that energy. Building the new arena. There's a lot of reasons to like the Clippers. And, I mean, I just saw, like, on the internet, someone was doing a trivia thing, like, name the NBA franchises that have never been to the NBA Finals. And every one of them was, a relatively new team. And the Clippers, right?
And the Clippers.
So it was like the Grizzlies and the Hornets and then the Clippers. You're like, oh, this got to be their
year.
San
Diego Clippers via the Boston Buffalo Braves.
Buffalo Braves, yeah.
When they first came to San Diego. That was a pretty good basketball team.
That was.
And pretty bad owner.
Was that McAdoo? Was Bob McAdoo on that team?
Randy Smith was a great guard. World B. Free, Lloyd Free at that time was there. Then they became the San Diego Clippers. And just off the top of my head, Tommy Chambers, Michael Brooks, Bill Walton for 15 minutes before he broke down. They really had great looking uniforms. They had the flags as the logo on the side of the jerseys. They were really cool looking, but wasn't much of a team. And the badass owner, Donald Sterling.
Donald Sterling. Oh, my God.
Okay, a couple more here before we go into social media.
Okay, let's go here to Sam Crow. He says, there's not enough TV money in Quebec, in my opinion.
It's a smaller market, I concur, but it would be a regional market. And you could charge pretty impressive ticket price numbers. And then you get into NHL revenue sharing because the TV contract is really different. And you got a big arena. I mean, if you're playing in a 17, 18,000 arena, which was different from the old Colisée where I broadcast from when I was in the WHA, which was, I think, might have been 10,000. I'm just surprised that Quebec in hockey, Quebec City, and Montreal in baseball has not been given another chance. So Montreal does not have a new baseball stadium that have to go into Olympic Stadium. And there are a lot of people working behind the scenes that think that they could build a new stadium in Montreal if they got a commitment from baseball. But I think it's an injustice, Quebec City, because it's hockey. And that the Nordique were just a phenomenal franchise in WHA before the economics kind of changed and they had an old small arena.
Wow. So the Nordique, did they go bankrupt? Did they move?
They moved to Colorado. They became the Colorado Avalanche. Patrick Waugh and all those guys. And then Joe Sakic became general manager, and the rest is history, and the Stanley Cups have won. But that was the original Quebec Nordique franchise.
Well, it's interesting when you look at that corridor along the St. Lawrence River.
Sure.
I mean, Toronto is just an incredibly huge city. Montreal's decent size, but Quebec is still a lot smaller.
So is Ottawa, the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, them too.
They've had some pretty good seasons, and they're very well supported, and they're building a new arena in Ottawa. It can be done, and it's their sport. That's why it's in Vancouver with maybe the best team in the West. That's why it's in Calgary. That's why Winnipeg, although they've had a franchise leave after the WHA-NHL merger, they became the Coyotes. That's why Winnipeg got a franchise when Atlanta went belly up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then you go east from Edmonton to Calgary to Winnipeg, and you go east and you got Maple Leafs, Canadiens, that's history, original six. Ottawa, the expansion franchise, and obviously, you know, what they had with Quebec City.
Wow. Wow. A lot of history there. Let's keep moving. Let's go to Douglas. He says, they have the America West Arena where the Suns play, plus the Gila River Arena where they used to play. That should be acceptable.
Well, you would think they renovated the Gila River one, but the problem was past ownership left a huge amount of debt, and the Gila River people threw them out of the arena. You know, there's all these arenas down in downtown Phoenix, even the old Memorial Coliseum where the Suns originally played. But it's got to be with skyboxes. It's got to be up to date. They just haven't been able to get anything built. And I don't know if Alex Marullo, who seems to have the right intent, he's been given a 5-year window once they sell the Coyotes to go to Salt Lake City, whether or not he can get that thing built. Man, there's a lot of hockey fans joining
us. Well, that's good. It's good to talk a little hockey, right?
Expand it. I know everything about everything. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, we love the Padres, too, but we don't talk about Padres 24-7. Hey, you want to go to social media?
Do it.
Hey, let's take a look over here. Okay, let's take a peek, and we'll go down the list. Hey, let's talk a little. This is a good one. Hacksaw, you are a legend. Miss your voice on the radio, but still enjoy this.
Well, this is cool. We've really established something neat here. You ought to see the metrics. John does all this research of how many people sample what we're doing. We're over 5,000 subscribers in 15 months here. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's just YouTube.
That's just YouTube. Now, we do these things called One Man's Opinion that I do on the social media platforms, notably Instagram. Mm-hmm. He knows the specific numbers of a couple things that we've done that are just absolutely phenomenal. We had, I'm trying to think, I did one on Stan Kroenke versus Dean Spanos, the Rams Chargers owners, had like 440,000 views.
Oh, it's more than that. It's over 500,000. There's a lot of those videos that you've done that have been just blown up, that have been hundreds and hundreds of thousands of videos. But when you look at what we're doing across all the social media platforms and the podcasting platforms, it's like we got Hacksaw everywhere in every nook and cranny. And it's just building and growing and people are loving it.
He did the research, he put out a piece that listed each of the platforms we're on. We have been viewed by 1.8 million people. That's how many followers we have on all the different platforms.
Right.
It's absolutely, absolutely stunning. So it's your fault. You've made us a success.
Okay. Let's talk Angels baseball. And this is from Tom. And he says, hey, been an Angels season ticket holder for 25 years. Dropped out of the 2023 season. Won't buy back until Moreno is gone. He's a pathetic owner and bad for baseball at this point. He's turning into Donald Sterling.
That's not a bad call, and it's too bad because he was welcome with open arms when he bought the thing from Disney, and then he signed all the free agents, and they got dinged by some of the free agents, and then they were touched by the terrible tragedies, the DUI death of Nick Adenhart, who was an innocent victim when he got a T-bone by a drunk driver, then the drug-related death of Tyler Skaggs a couple of years ago. And the fact that he's made so many mistakes because he's such an impulsive owner. John, we talked maybe a year ago, after last baseball season, and we were talking about Moreno, is he going to sell it? Should he keep it? And I made the comment, if he wants to keep it, there are baseball executives out there that he should meet and brainstorm and take ideas from. And I mentioned two of them. One was the late Larry Lucchino, who just passed. The other was a state-of-the-art general manager who won all those World Series rings in Boston, Theo Epstein. Mm. He should have taken some advice, taken some notes, gotten some input, and brought it back. Orange County is a market unto itself. I think it's a great sports market. You know, they got this angst with L.A., like the people down in San Diego have the angst with L.A.
Yeah.
But it's a great individual market, and it's just, it's too bad. And he was so popular when he bought the franchise from Disney. A part of me feels really bad because I liked him, but part of me says, you got to do a better job, and you haven't done a better job. And, you know, I did a podcast for some people who cover the Angels up in Anaheim, and I said, make a contact with a longtime baseball executive. Use them as a sounding board to take ideas, how to rearrange what you're doing, restructure. And I said Lucchino, and then I said Epstein. And that's just me talking. He never did it, and he's got this franchise now. It's in disarray. Well, the biggest thing about their home baseball games, the fans boo. They don't boo Mike Trout, but they boo a lot of other people.
You got to tell Artie Moreno, you know, pick a topic, pick up a phone, you know, to get him online. You know, yeah, it's been a problem. I wouldn't say he's as bad as Donald Sterling. And that's a whole other level of problems.
Yes.
And the racism and all that crap. But, you know, it's how do I say this? The Angels have the potential to be so good. I mean, they really do. And they just keep screwing themselves. Then I read in your Best 15 this morning that he fired Rod Carew from the spring training practices. Did you see that?
Well, there's a big controversy last week and it's been replaced by the Otani story. But there was a big issue. Rod Carew wants his name taken off the board. He's in their Hall of Fame. He wants his uniform taken down. Now, I got a gripe with Carew. Great baseball player, beloved, both Minnesota and Anaheim. But it's almost as if he's walking around saying, you owe me a job in my retirement. Well, nobody owes anybody a job once your career is over and you made a lot of money. If you don't have a lot of money, well, that's on you. I hate to criticize Carew, but this sounds awful whiny. You know, and the fact that he wanted to be part of Mike Socia's coaching staff. Mike Socia said, no, I have a coaching staff. And he was doing some stuff for the Minnesota Twins, and he wanted to do stuff for the Angels. And Mike Socia said, no, you can't work for both ball clubs. It's kind of a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
And, you know, now he's gotten all pissy. And I hate to see it because we all rooted for him when he had the heart transplant surgery.
Right.
And he's carried a grudge against Artie Moreno and... But it's like he's acting like you owe me a job because I'm Rod Carew. I just don't think it is. I'd like to see him patch it up. but I don't think that's going to happen because he said a lot of rude things about him, and now he wants to go back and work for him in some form or fashion.
I mean, it's just pile on Moreno kind of thing, you know, where he's jumping in on it. Rod Crew, of course, one of the all-time greats, but you know what I always think about when I hear Rod Crew's name is the Hanukkah song by Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
You know, because he slips in Rod Crew in the lyrics and it's terrific. But I remember just seeing pictures of Rod Crew and Tony Gwynn with all their Silver Slugger bats. Yep. And it's just, that's just wonderful.
Yeah. You know, if you just ask me off the top of my head, Lee, give me a couple names of the greatest hitters you've seen modern day baseball.
Yeah.
I'd say Tony Gwynn. I'm biased, obviously, because of the person and the player. Rod Carew is right there. Tony Oliva and Wade Boggs. Those are just off the top of my head. I mean, we're talking about great stroke guys and always putting the ball in play, hitting in the 350s. Just phenomenal. Hey, listen, we hope you have enjoyed our podcast, our Monday bonus podcast, brought to you by Dixie Line Lumber and Home Centers, 9 stores to serve you in San Diego, and by North County Eye Center of Poway and Escondido. We will be back Thursday, 1 p.m. We drop the green flag. Hope you'll be part of our get-together then. Reminder, check my website. I write on it every day, LeeHacksawHamilton.com, and fill out the orange box so you can be part of Hacksaw's Insiders Group. John, here comes NBA play-in basketball. As quirky as that is, it's must-watch TV because it could be one and done for a marquee team or two beginning Tuesday, Wednesday.
Loving the one and dones. And hey, by the way, shout out to Jackie Robinson. Today's his day.
Oh, somebody asked me about Jackie Robinson. I said, if there were three people that I wish I could sit and have lunch over for 4 hours and just talk about their lives, because I didn't know much about my dad, so he would be one. I'm a huge historian. Franklin Delano Roosevelt would be two. And because I love the sport, Jackie Robinson would be three. That'd be a lunch worth sitting and listening in on.
Yeah, can I get invited to that one?
You got that covered. Hey, listen, thanks for being with us. We'll see you come Thursday. Thank you, as always, for joining us on Hacksaw's Headlines.
Join us again for Hacksaw's Headlines on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. And find the audio version on your favorite podcast app.
Touchdown, San Diego!
For more content, go to LeeHacksawHamilton.com.